Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $300 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $300 into something bigger when you bet on money lines, spread, totals, player props.
$300 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along. Which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. At ZipRecruiter.com/zip. That's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
Hello and welcome back to ACRAC. I'm Jed Wolpaw and I am really excited for a great show today. I've got three fabulous folks on and we're going to talk about what's new in leadless pacemaker and ICD technology. And for frequent listeners, you know that we've talked about this with Mike Asando and some other folks in the past. And I actually reached out to Mike because I figured, man, it's been long enough. This is such a fast-paced, rapidly evolving area of medicine that it'd be good to get an update. And he said, oh, I've got the three people for you who you have to have on to talk about what's going on because they've all been super involved in this. And so I'm really excited. I've got these three folks. We're going to talk about this, and I think this will be really helpful for everyone. So I have with me Dr. Jonathan Tang, who is an assistant professor of cardiac and liver anesthesiology and the associate director of the hepatic transplant anesthesia program at The Ohio State University. I've got Dr. Jordan Holloway, who is an adult cardiothoracic anesthesiology fellow at Ohio State University right now and will be doing a critical care fellowship next year, near and dear to my own heart. And finally, Dr. Manoj Iyer, who is an associate professor of anesthesiology at The Ohio State University Wexner Medical Center. And I assume, Manoj, also a cardiac anesthesiologist. Yeah?
I am a cardiac anesthesiologist and also I'm director of liver transplant anesthesia.
Oh, fabulous. All right. So liver and cardiac. We got two of you who do liver and cardiac. And then Jordan, you will be doing critical care and cardiac. That would certainly set you up to also do liver if you were interested. Is that in your future or no? You're sticking with the ICU and the cardiac OR?
I think I'll be sticking with the cardiac and ICU OR, but I'm happy to be here still.
Fabulous. And you are very welcome. There was no requirement to be a liver person. In fact, I don't think we're talking about liver anesthesia at all today. Well, I'm thrilled to have the three of you on and looking forward to the conversation. So thanks for being here. Let's start with you, Manoj, and just kind of give us an overview of what are we talking about today. We're talking obviously about leadless pacers, but why, what's going on, and why do we need to do an update a few years after we first talked about it?
Well, thanks, Jed. Thanks for having us on your podcast. As you know, technology in general, not only in the world of pacemakers, but just in general, has been moving at an extremely fast pace. And it's important that we all keep on, especially as practicing clinicians, that we stay on top of these advances. And basically what we want to do is educate the listeners as to what's new in the field and what the new technologies are and how the field has evolved and just making all the technology better. As you mentioned before, Dr. Asando and some of our other colleagues, Dr. Thomas Grawl and Dr. Joe Cody, went over this before. But what we want to do is update the listeners to what's going on. As you know, the original device that first came out was the original Micra device. And since then, we've had newer iterations and newer ways of communicating between leadless pacemakers and also sub-Q ICDs, which is basically opening a whole new field of basically avoiding the whole venous system and the complications associated with the placing these devices in the venous system. As you know, conventional pacemakers and ICDs typically are placed in a pocket and then basically accessed through a subclavian Batavian vein and then placed into the heart. There's a litany of complications associated with that, including infections, subsequent endocarditis, which develops when those leads get infected, thrombosis of the veins and stenosis of those veins also too, leading to occlusion. And then, of course, we have tricuspid valve issues also too. And then there's, of course, lead extraction complications, which are extremely, as you know, as those devices stay in there longer and longer, the complication rates and the difficulty of getting those out becomes more and more difficult. So the new iterations that we have are, of course, the transvenous pacemakers. We originally started out with the St. Jude NanoStim, and then we've progressed over to the Micra. And then now we're more into the Avere and eventually the Empower system, which will all made by different companies, which will then become more and more advanced as we go along. The NanoStim, which first came out by St. Jude, of course, had its was a great device when it first came out, but unfortunately had its complications. We had issues with the battery longevity of it. And then also the ability to retrieve them. We had issues with the docking button system, with those actually getting dislodged and migrating into the venous system, out into the pulmonary vasculature also too. So that was removed out of the market. And then we came out to the Avere type system, which we'll get into a little bit here with both Jordan and Jonathan talking about it also too. When it comes down to CRTs, sub-Q ICDs, we initially had the first one the Emblem CRT, which first came out. And now we've come out to the YCRT, which is now doing that. And the important thing is that with these CRTs that we're able to actually communicate with these leadless pacemakers, which help provide anti-tachycardic therapies and also subsequent bradycardic therapies after defibrillation therapy also too. So our hope is to kind of go over these with the listeners and talk about them and talk about what the advances are in the technology.
Fabulous. This stuff is just so exciting. It's so different. And as you say, you know, my understanding is that it really addresses some of these major concerns that can develop over time with the traditional pacemakers. Now, I will say I'm pretty positive, but correct me if I'm wrong, none of us have any conflicts of interest. We don't work for any of these companies and we don't make any money if anybody chooses one over the other company when putting in these devices, correct?
That is correct.
Not yet. All right. Well, if Boston Scientific or whoever else is making these things wants to sponsor us, reach out. We're happy to have the conversation. All right. So fabulous. And Jordan, let's go to you and maybe let's review. I know we talked about it in the past, but first of all, it may have been updated and also just people may not have heard that original one. So give us a little review of the Micra leadless pacing systems. What's available? What do they do? What are the pros and cons?
Yeah, thanks. So as Dr. Iyer kind of already referred to, you know, the initial leadless pacemaker was the NanoStim from St. Jude. Unfortunately, it was taken off the market here and then it was also initially approved in Europe, but it was taken off the market there too. So it's no longer marketed really at all. And during that time, Medtronic came out with the Micra device. And initially it was the Micra VR device. So that was approved, I think, in 2016. All of the Micra devices are RV pacing devices that are implanted percutaneously. So they're typically implanted via the femoral vein, though there's some case reports of them being implanted other venous routes. Like there's a couple case reports of it being implanted from the IJ route, for instance. And they implant that into the mid septum of the right ventricle because it's got the lowest pacing threshold and it's also where the wall's the thickest. So one of the big worries with placing these things and putting tines into the right ventricle, as you can imagine, is perforation because it can be pretty thin. So it goes into that mid septal area. But what's important to know about the Micra is it's only able to provide pacing. So it can't provide any kind of tachyarrhythmia therapy, which we'll talk about the Emblem and Empower devices and how those are a little bit different. But the Micra itself can only RV pace. And this Micra VR that came out in 2016, it uses an accelerometer, which is also a little bit different than your typical pacemaker. So it'll V-sense using an accelerometer and can only provide asynchronous mode pacing. So it can do VVI or it can do VOO, but it can't sense the atrium at all.
And say, so tell me, Jordan, what does that mean? It uses an accelerometer to sense. What is it actually doing?
Yeah. So rather than sensing electrical stimulus, it actually senses the movement of the ventricle. So if it doesn't sense that kind of acceleration and movement of the ventricle, that's when it'll pace, as opposed to sensing something purely electric.
Gotcha. So it's looking for the absence of movement of the ventricle, and in the absence of that movement, it will go ahead and pace. But if it feels the movement, it then inhibits itself.
Correct.
Great.
And as you can imagine, that micro-VR was a good option for a patient with a bradyarrhythmia that didn't need AV synchrony. So someone with, you know, chronic AFib who's never going to have an atrial kick, or for someone with a low heart rate with bradycardia tachycardia syndrome that doesn't need an atrial kick. But it was a big problem for people who did need AV synchronous pacing. And the battery life of the original micro-VR was only about 12 years. So they came out in 2020, which I think is just before the last Micra podcast with the Micra AV. And it had an improved accelerometer that could actually dual sense. So it could sense an atrial kick as well, but it will only RV pace. So unlike a dual chamber pacemaker, which is going to give you potentially a kick in the RA and then also in the RV, it's only going to pace your RV, even though it can sense the atrium. But that does allow for AV synchronous pacing, and it'll improve your cardiac output if you have a patient that's particularly dependent on an atrial kick. So, for example, if you have a patient with a high degree AV block, it's a really good option because it will sense the atrial kick there. Its battery life is just a little less than the micro-VR in its original version, and it came with a couple of new features as well with mode switching, which is a little bit interesting. So one of the big mode switches that it had is it also, now that it could sense the atrium, had an activity mode. So you could have rate responsiveness with the Micra AV that didn't necessarily exist as well with the Micra VR. And what it would do is when it sensed excessive motion, it would increase the baseline rate. And again, that's different to the VR. And it's also different with what I think Dr. Tang will be talking about with the AV Air. So the way that it increases its rate is due to excessive motion.
And that's motion of the patient? Like if the patient, the whole body of the patient is moving at a certain speed?
Yes.
Okay. And then there must be an upper limit on that, right? So like not when you're in a car.
Yes. Yeah. Right. And I obviously not necessarily privy to the exact mechanisms of how that works, but yeah, there's, you know, ways in which it is sensitive to that, but it's not perfectly sensitive. So that is a concern, for instance, if you're doing any kind of surgery in the chest where things are going to be moving, that the way that this thing will react is not necessarily fully elucidated.
Okay.
The other mode switch that it had was the AV conduction mode switch. So in order to preserve its battery life, it'll intermittently go in between a VDD mode and a VVI mode. So it'll intermittently start trying to VVI at about 40 beats per minute. But if the intrinsic rate is greater than 40 beats per minute, it'll stay in that mode. And if it's not, it'll go into a VDD mode. So it by doing that allows it to essentially decide whether or not it's going to be sensing the atrium or not sensing the atrium, if that makes sense.
Because it'll save itself battery life if it doesn't have to sense the atrium?
Exactly.
Okay. Great.
Those were both new with the Micra AV. And then in 2023, so since that podcast, there's been the release of the Micra AV2 and the Micra VR2. They don't have huge differences, not as much of a difference between like the VR and the AV, except for that the AV2 has an improved algorithm, particularly for the activity switching mode, because they were having issues where, to your point, people were moving around, or it wasn't necessarily that they actually had increased metabolic demand and it wasn't necessarily reacting appropriately. And it also increases the responsive heart rate. So the initial AV had a peak heart rate of 115 for that activity mode, and the new one has a peak heart rate of 135. That's programmable, but that's as high as it'll go. And then both of them, the VR2 and the AV2, have improved battery lives for up to 16 or 17 years per the manufacturer, which is, almost a 5-6 year difference. So it's pretty substantial.
Yeah, great. Now, if you run out of the battery life, so let's say a younger person gets this and now, you know, even the 15, 16 years, they now are running low on battery. Do they try to retrieve that one and put a new one in? Do they just put a new one in on top of the old one? What do they do?
I think there's options essentially for both. They're considered to be fully epithelialized or within about, I believe, about 2 months. So if it's been in for a while, it's obviously still going to kind of hold those same risks of high-risk lead extraction. But there is the possibility, and there are devices available to remove them. The option also exists to turn that one off and to implant a new one, but since these devices are so new, the consequences of having multiple devices sitting in your ventricle are not fully understood yet. So, you know, both options exist, and I don't know that we know which one's the best yet, since it's only been a couple of years.
Yeah, interesting. In fact, there's probably not a person alive who has had a second one, right?
I think there's been case reports. I don't remember top of the head the exact effects, but there, if you look online, there's a few case reports of patients having implanted two, and you know, them just turning off the original and just implanting the second on top.
Okay, yeah. Interesting. Now that I guess that must be because of like it was malfunctioning or something, right? Because these haven't been out for 16, 17 years, right?
Yeah, I would presume it's probably most often due to some kind of malfunction, and then the battery. You know, life suggestions are really based on an X amount of use. So if you're being paced more often than they accounted for, then certainly it could also run your battery out faster than what they're accounting for.
Okay. Now, how do you know if somebody has one of these? Can you tell on a chest X-ray or, you know, obviously if they know, then they can tell you, but what if they're unconscious? You know, how do you know?
Chest X-ray is probably the best. What's kind of one of the more unfortunate things about the leadless pacemakers. I mean, it's fortunate in a cosmetic sense that you don't have a scar, but I feel like that's one of those dead giveaways when patients come to the OR emergently that you see the scar from their generator, and you obviously won't see that with a Micra. So chest X-ray is probably the best way, or I guess if you have a patient with no scar and then you're seeing them with obvious pacemaker morphology on your EKG, that's maybe the other way to know. But those are kind of the only two things I can think of. Maybe if they have a card in their wallet, something like that.
And can the chest X-ray differentiate amongst these different, like the Micra versus the Avere that we're going to talk about? Or do you just know they have something in the heart, but you can't tell which one it is?
Unfortunately, being a more audio than a visual podcast, there are ways, but you would have to be able to understand what the device looks like at baseline. And if you look really carefully to chest X-ray, you can tell, but it is difficult for an untrained eye to immediately differentiate between them two.
Okay.
It comes down to how the device is implanted in the endocardium. The Micra uses four little tines, so the tip comes down to more of a point, while the Avere is screwed in, so it remains a more like rectangular tip to it. So you can tell, but like again, to an untrained eye, can be somewhat difficult.
Okay.
I think the other clue for the Avere is because it has the possibility of having the right atrial device as well. If you see a device sitting in the right atrium and the right ventricle, the likelihood that that's a Micra is extremely low. So it's nearly impossible for that to be a Micra. But you can, as I'm sure Dr. Tang will talk about, you know, implant just an RV Avere. So if it's just an RV, it doesn't necessarily guarantee that it's a Micra.
Right. All right. Well, let's talk about the Avere. Jonathan, do you want to take us through the Avere? What is it? How does it differ? What do we need to know?
Yeah. So the Avere started out, like we mentioned earlier, with the NanoStim. So the NanoStim was a St. Jude device. However, early in the mid-2010s, Abbott acquired St. Jude and started redesigning the device to overcome some of its limitations earlier on. And then it became the Avere and was FDA approved in like April 2022. That new device had a newer docking button, so it wouldn't break off. Newer battery chemistry, so the battery life longevities were more normal. And then, like we discussed, the original device was just a RV pacing device. So we had RV pacing, no atrial pacing, so kind of same limitations with the Micra, where, you know, if the patient needed the AV synchrony, that they would feel terrible. Major differences to note, though, over the Micra, again, like we just kind of discussed with looking at the device in X-ray, how the device is implanted into the myocardium is a little different, so the design is a little different. And one thing that the Avere has that the Micra does not have is that it also responds to magnet. It has a little magnet sensor, so it will respond to a magnet while the Micra will not. It has very similar magnet functionality to a traditional pacemaker, where when it detects a magnet, it'll go into a asynchronous mode. Typically, when it first detects a magnet, it'll pace about 100 beats per minute for about 5 beats. and then it'll go to a slightly lower rate based off the residual battery life left. In a kind of different pathway than the Micra and Medtronic devices, instead of using an accelerometer, they developed a secondary pacemaker. So it's a different design. It's a slightly smaller device that's be able to be implanted to the right atrium, and it will communicate with the right ventricle device and to provide that AV synchrony. So having two devices allows you to have sensing in both the atrium and the ventricle, as well as pacing in the atrium ventricle, which provides slightly better AV synchrony as well.
So it's two separate devices, and they're not connected by a wire. They communicate wirelessly.
That is correct. And the design is also, it can be used as a modular system. So you can, if they don't have any, say, conduction blockade, you can place a RA, a leadless pacemaker, and that'll be fine. But if they need, or if they develop some conduction delay, you know, implant both devices. One other interesting thing to note, too, regarding this device, we talk about activity sensing and rate responsiveness. So whereas the Micra uses an accelerometer, the Avere uses a temperature sensor. So it can adjust that pacing rate based off activity level, increased metabolic load, increases temperature. So that increased temperature sensed would increase heart rate. One interesting thing to know, there was case reports with the original NanoStim that in patients who are like during rewarm, during bypass, or during some who's maybe a little febrile, that their heart rate would increase in response to the elevated body temperature. So that's something that would be, you know, if for a patient in the OR, you know, warming them up or they get a little febrile, if their heart rate starts to increase a little bit, that's probably one of the reasons why.
Okay, that's good to know. All right, so that's the Avere. And then there are other versions of this, or, you know, what other kind of types of Avere pacemakers are there?
So it's really a family. So it came out, so the original device came out as a single right ventricular pacer. Then there was a second right atrial pacer. They're, even though if you look at that patient, it's two different devices. The right atrial pacer is backwards compatible with the original device as well. They can be planted both at the same time or one at a time, depending on the needs of the patient at that time. But it's a one single family of pacing devices, two different pacemakers of two different, slightly different designs, that work with each other to provide a more comprehensive pacing strategy.
Stay with us. We'll be right back. Hey, folks, if you've ever been listening to a patient's heart and lungs in pre-op and wondering if there's some mild wheezing or a faint murmur, you are not alone. I used to struggle with this all the time until I got my echo. Honestly, listening through the echo is like night and day compared to a regular stethoscope. That's because Echo's digital stethoscope amplifies heart and lung sounds up to 40 times, and there's noise cancellation to cut out distractions. I can't emphasize enough how amazing it is when you can hear so clearly. The other day, I heard a murmur that my colleague with a regular stethoscope just couldn't hear. And you can unlock murmur and AFib detection powered by Echo AI along with sound recording and sharing for earlier diagnosis. Echo is backed by 4 million heart sounds and 8 FDA clearances for devices and AI algorithms. Those who use it are 2 times more likely to detect heart disease. I can't tell you how much better I can hear hearts and lungs in every area with my Echo. I trust Echo so much that I worked with their team to create a special offer just for our listeners. Right now, you can get $50 off plus a free customizable chest piece cover at echohealth.com/ACRAC. Your purchase is HSA and FSA eligible and may qualify for CME reimbursement. Plus, Echo guarantees you'll detect heart sounds and lung conditions more confidently. If you don't, return it for a full refund. Go to echohealth.com/ACCRAC for $50 off plus a free chest piece cover. That's ekohealth.com/ACCRAC. Hey, ACRACers. We are thrilled to have as a returning sponsor the one and only TrueLearn Smart Banks. I've used TrueLearn for my residents for years, and it is hands down the best smart bank out there. The questions are excellent, and the answers have clear explanations that break down why each choice is correct or incorrect. I love that it's customizable, so you can target weak areas or take a longer or shorter practice exam anytime. Their metrics are great, and their mobile app lets you study on the go. We use their ITE, basic, and advanced smart banks for our residents, each with 1,000-plus questions, realistic visuals and graphs, and even a calculator that mimics what you have on the exam. Our residents love it and get great results. TrueLearn even has a CME Smart Bank where you can get AMA, PRA, Category 1 credits after you finish training, and an adult cardiac anesthesiology Smart Bank as well.
And now they have a fabulous flashcard product, which you can check out, and I highly recommend it. Go to TrueLearn.com and use code ACRAC to get $25 off residency exams, USMLE, and Comlex Smart Bank subscriptions of 90 days or longer, and up to 20% off other healthcare exam subscriptions. We rely on TrueLearn for our test prep, and I recommend you do the same. TrueLearn.com and use code ACCRAC. Hey, folks, I want to dive deeper into something that I think can truly make a difference for healthcare workers, Figs scrubs, made for awesome humans. These are scrubs that have our needs in mind. They're durable, antimicrobial, and super comfortable, which matters when you're 10 hours into your shift. I love my Figs, and let me tell you, my wife, a pediatrician, loves hers so much that it's all she wears to work. Ever since COVID, she's all Figs all the time. It doesn't matter if you're a dentist, a nurse practitioner, an anesthesiologist like me, or even a med student starting out. Investing in a couple pairs of Figs is totally worth it. We're partnering with Figs to get you 15% off your first purchase when you use code FIGSRX at wearfigs.com. Figs goes beyond scrubs, too. They've got shoes, underscrubs, and even jackets that will make the ever-present hospital AC seem like a thing of the past. And they come in a wide range of colors that will let your personality shine through. Try Figs today by going to wearfigs.com and get 15% off your first order when you enter code FIGSRX at checkout.
Save big money on everything for your next project when you shop at Menards. Menards has a huge selection of concrete and mortar mixes. Our concrete products are great for a variety of applications, including pouring a walkway, setting a post, or even installing stone veneer. View our entire selection of concrete mixes and supplies in-store and on Menards.com. Plus, check out the weekly flyer for more great deals happening this week. Save big money at Menards.
All right, and we're back.
Okay, and so the original versions of these were just, as we said, right ventricular. Now you got this atrial piece as well. Is it placed all at once in the same session? And if so, you know, where exactly in the atrium are they going? How? What are the kind of specifics of this?
So they can be placed at the same time. So the interesting thing about the right atrial pacing is it is placed kind of near the right atrial appendage, which becomes important, especially in the early phases, if they would, say, come back to the OR for any reason, because the right atrial appendage is very close to where, you know, a wire might go. So if you're placed in a central line, if you're cannulating a patient for cardiac surgery, you have to be real careful not to interfere with the device and maybe knock it loose.
Okay. Now, you can get AV synchrony from this, as you said, but you can't get CRT, right? You're not pacing both ventricles. Is that right?
That is correct. We're not pacing both ventricles. So that's still a major limitation right now of the leadless pacemakers. However, there's been a new development relatively recently, which hopefully maybe we'll touch on, that may counteract that.
Okay. Anything else about the AVEIR before we move on to the emblem?
No, I think that's all the major highlights for the AVEIR.
Great. All right. Well, Manoj, let's go to you to talk about the Boston Scientific Emblem, SICD, and the Empower Leadless Pacemaker System. So I assume these are both Boston Scientific, and tell us about them.
Yeah. So the first sub-Q ICD, of course, was developed and introduced in about 2012. And since then, it was basically a great innovation, because all of a sudden we could avoid the venous system and the complications associated with it. The other thing that I'll also talk about is that depending on how often these ICDs are firing, the battery change out also too, and the complications with the pocket erosion, etc. So with the sub-Q ICD, basically how it's implanted is subcutaneously, of course, hence the name sub-Q ICD. The generator is placed along the left mid-axillary line, and the lead itself goes along the left parasternal border. So that basically you avoid all the vasculature altogether. It's able to detect any type of arrhythmia and then subsequently provide a shock to defibrillate the heart out of that arrhythmia. The problem, though, is that a lot of times when these fire, they don't have the pacing capabilities that a pacemaker is able to do. So, for example, if you end up bradycardic after a defibrillation episode, you're not able to pace back at a higher heart rate to improve your cardiac output. Likewise, if you're able to do a basically an ATP or anti-tachycardia pacing to help get out of the rhythm, that's not possible with a sub-Q ICD. And that's what's really exciting now with this new pivotal trial, which is undergoing right now, where basically you have the Emblem sub-Q ICD communicating with Boston Scientific's own Empower leadless pacemaker. And this is kind of where the technology is really heading, is that now you're completely able to avoid the vasculature altogether. You have a leadless pacemaker in place, which is communicating with the sub-Q ICD, or I should say the other way around. The sub-Q ICD is actually communicating with the pacemaker to then provide those anti-tachycardic pacemaking if necessary, and then the bradycardic pacemaking is necessary also.
Because this will expand the patient population that the sub-Q can go into. Because if there was any concern that the patient may develop any need for pacing, the electrophysiologist wouldn't place a sub-Q ICD in these patients. So like they need a sub-Q ICD, but if they're worried that for some reason, due to high risk factors, as determined by the electrophysiologist, that they would need pacing sometime in the near future, they wouldn't qualify for the sub-Q ICD. But now that you have this modular system where you can use a leadless pacemaker as a backup, they can place a sub-Q ICD first, and then if it turns out they do need bradycardic pacing later, they can add that feature on at a later point in time.
Yeah, so the way this would work, tell me if I'm right here, is that somebody goes in, you know, they're at home, they've got this device in, they go into VFib, they get shocked. Now they go into, let's say, a sinus bradycardia at, you know, 30 beats a minute, which is better than VFib, but it's probably not enough to perfuse their body all that well. And so in the past, I think maybe the original SICD could do a little bit, right? Maybe like a minute or something
of pacing. Yeah, just the very post-shock pacing for a very brief duration, but it's not designed for a long term. It wouldn't continue past that.
The battery would not be able to.
But now it's going to say to the leadless pacer, hey, you need to pace because we shocked into a bradycardic rhythm. And then the pacer will start pacing. And honestly, probably they don't even need to say that to each other because the pacer is going to pace anyway if you're low. So basically they're just working together. And now you get the defibrillation and the pacing. And then it sounds like you're also saying that the leadless pacer, if it determines that the patient is in, let's say, a VTAC with a pulse, might be able to try to pace out of that rhythm rather than shock. Is that right?
So the interesting thing is that it's actually, as far as we know right now, the technology is unidirectional. So it's only the sub-Q ICD which can sense these type of things and is going to talk to the Empower and tell it, hey, do this for me. The Empower itself will not be able to detect and then talk to back
okay.
to the ICD.
And do we know what kind, just in general, I mean, it's an interesting thing. I don't know that everyone realizes that a anti-tachycardia pacing is a thing. So what kind of rhythms would you use this for?
Primarily for VFib or VTAC, VTAC exact is where you would actually want to use that to increase the heart rate to try to get them out of that rhythm back into a normal rhythm, perfusing rhythm at that point. So like I said, the sub-Q ICD would actually have to detect that and then tell the pacemaker, hey, increase your heart rate so that way we can get out of this rhythm.
Yeah, and we're talking about
The reason why that's nice too is it's not a full high energy shock. So when you get a full high energy shock, whether it's even for a traditional transvenous pacer or that sub-Q ICD, it's not a pleasant thing.
Yeah.
So
the psychological
sequelae is quite high. So yeah. ATP pacing, adding that is much more relatively comfortable for the patient.
And also with these smaller devices, of course, as you know, I mean, just similar to your iPhone, you know, the batteries can only last for so long. So if we can avoid the large charge that's necessary out of the sub-Q ICD, we can then preserve that battery and then hopefully keep things for a longer period. And as Dr. Tang also kind of mentioned too, the modularity of this is really important, that we can now custom tailor for patients as to what they exactly need. The Empower itself hasn't been fully FDA approved as a leadless pacemaker as of this point. But I have a feeling that in the near future that it will be actually approved as its own leadless pacemaker. So if somebody develops malignant arrhythmias down the road and they need an ICD, we can always add that on, which will then communicate with the Empower. Mm-hmm. And vice versa, like Dr. Tang said, we can always put the leadless pacemaker in if they're finding that they're getting shocked and need to get bradycardic subsequently after that. So the modularity of these therapies and these devices are really going to be able to custom tailor to what each individual patient needs. And more importantly, we're avoiding the vascular system and the associated complications with that. I mean, unfortunately, with every new technology, time will always, of course, tell as to what complications are going to be associated with that. Like, do we need to put new devices in, the battery longevity, et cetera, and the retrieval of these devices. But as of right now, this is super exciting, the type of communication that we can have with these devices and then be able to program them accordingly for these patients.
Yeah, very cool. And just going back to the ATP for a second. So is the idea that if a patient, let's say, is in VTAC at 160, and I'm making this up, but if you pace them at 170, you are potentially going to make the focus of the VTAC refractory at the time it wants to fire again, and therefore it will kind of short circuit the VTAC. That's the idea.
That's the hope.
Correct. Okay. All right. Very cool. All right. So let's talk about the final one, the Medtronic Aurora Extravascular ICD. What is that, and how does it differ from the Emblem SICD?
So the Emblem, you know, as Dr. Iyer mentioned earlier, is kind of placed along the left mid-axillary line, and the lead is placed outside the sternum. Given that placement, its location away from the heart, you need quite high energy levels to defibrillate the heart. You know, so that leads to a bigger battery and a relatively shorter battery life. So the idea behind the Aurora extravascular was to place the electrode a little bit closer to the heart. So in this case, you still have a little generator, left axillary line, but then the wire, the electrode itself is placed beneath the sternum, closer to the heart.
Substernally,
outside the pericardium still. Given the fact that it's much closer to the heart, you need a lot less energy to defibrillate the heart, which means you can get away with a smaller battery, as well as a slightly longer battery life given the similar usage. So the size of a sub-Q ICD battery is about the size of a deck of cards. The newer extravascular Aurora ICD generator is about the size of a traditional pacemaker. So it's a very small, almost like a small matchbox size, maybe slightly larger than a small matchbox size. One other benefit, given that it's substernal, is it can also provide some level pacing. Still not designed for long-term pacing, but you could buy a slightly longer pacing than a sub-Q ICD would. One downside, though, of this ability is the fact that it can lead to some extra cardiac stimulation, which can be uncomfortable to some patients. So just because a patient may have this device, it may not mean that this functionality of pacing or even the anti-tachycardic pacing functionality is on. So the extravascular Aurora device does have both bradycardic and ATP pacing capabilities, but may not be on in all patients.
Okay. Now, what does a magnet do for these devices? Let's go back to the Empower for a second. Does a magnet have any effect on the Empower leadless pacer?
It does not. As far as we can tell, and the documentation provided, the Empower does not respond to a magnet. So the magnet response with that system would rely on the sub-Q ICD itself. So the sub-Q ICD will respond to a magnet, as well as the Aurora extravascular ICD.
And so when you put a magnet on the Emblem SICD, does that disable it?
Essentially, yeah, it'll turn off all shock sensing and shock delivery.
Okay.
The thing with the sub-Q ICDs, though, the magnets do have to be placed in a very specific orientation depending on the brand and of the sub-Q ICD that's placed. So you can't literally just, like the old days, just slap a magnet on it and call it a day. You do have to look through the basically talk to an expert to figure out how exactly to place the magnet. And unfortunately, depending on what type of surgical procedure it is also too, that magnet may not stay in a proper location. So sometimes you do have to talk to the reps or your electrophysiologist to either turn off shock therapies or adjust, tailor the device accordingly. Also,
yep.
Unfortunately, these devices will make a tone in response to a magnet. So when a magnet is placed nearby and the sensing is inhibited, the device will make a noise.
Okay. And is that true for the Aurora as well? A magnet will disable it?
That's correct.
Okay. So, and then the other thing, if I remember correctly, is that at least for the Emblem SICD, because it is sensing a wider area, the old adage of, you know, you have to disable it if there's going to be electrocautery above the umbilicus may not be true, right? It could be a wider area.
Yeah, and technically it also holds true with the sub-Q ICD now, too. I think the newer recommendation suggests anything above the inguinal ligament should be considered in the zone of something that can be sensed by the sub-QICD or the EV-ICD, the extravascular ICD.
Okay, so the zone is a little wider. And what about these various things in like an MRI or if patient having ECT, you know, do you need to disable them? Do you need to have them interrogated afterwards? Do they have MRI modes? Does it vary from device to device or do we not know?
It varies device to device. So most of these newer devices have been tested and are what we call MR conditional, which means that the device and the MRI needs to be in like special settings, which usually are all, you know, published by the manufacturer. They need to be in special settings to help minimize damage or interference to the device itself.
Okay, great. Fabulous. Anything we didn't cover that you all want to hit before we move on?
So we'll kind of touch on it briefly, but there's a new device out recently called the Wyze CRT. It's out by a company, I think it's EBR out of Sunnyvale, California. So they've been working on this for a long time. It just got FDA approved in the last like 2 weeks or so. So we don't know a lot about the device yet, but it's designed to fill the last gap that we didn't have previously, which is that cardiac resynchronization therapy with pacing DLV. As far as we know, it's a new device that can communicate with existing RV pacemakers, and it uses a separate implanted device with ultrasound technology to help pace the left ventricle and provide some CRT pacing functionality now.
Interesting. Okay. But you have to have a traditional pacer in.
That is correct. It does not work alone. As far as we can tell, it's not its own standalone device, and it works with other companies. So it will work with a traditional transvenous pacemaker. It's supposed to work with a Micra. It detects, what it works is it detects a spike from the RV pacing, and then it'll send its own signal to its own device to pace the LV. The nice thing about this, because where it's implanted in the LV endocardium. It's a little bit more efficient at pacing the LV, whereas traditional transvenous devices, whether it be due to bad anatomy of the coronary sinus, high pacing threshold, extra cardiac pacing of the phrenic nerve, some patients may not do well with a traditional device. So this device, being away from all those structures, being outside the coronary sinus, allows you to avoid the traditional things that make it difficult for some patients to get a traditional CRT device.
Okay. So you could have a totally leadless CRT system. If you already had, let's say, a Micra in your RV, and now you're putting this new YCRT in your LV, you wouldn't need a traditional pacer. You just have to have something else in your RV.
That seems to be where the future is heading, yes.
Okay. All right. Now, what about for, let's say you have a patient come in who's young, maybe in their 20s, and they have, an issue, heart block, whatever it is, they need a pacer. Is it better to do one of these, even though, 15 years down the road, you're going to have to replace it because of the battery running out, or to do a traditional one, which obviously has all the complications that go with it, but, then you don't have to necessarily replace it at a certain time. It seems to me like that these new ones, these not leadless pacers are better for younger patients who would need this thing for 50, 60 years. Is that true, you think?
I think that's the goal is to, they're not, the leads are still not perfect yet, but they're getting quite good. So I think that's the goal that these newer devices, these younger patients who need to get a device, get a leadless, because I'm not sure if people have seen, getting a high-risk leak extraction, but a high-risk leak extraction is a very not trivial procedure. So just being able to avoid a, high-risk leak extraction, would greatly reduce the morbidity and mortality of, having the device like that. So right. I think in a smaller device, I think as the studies, hopefully we'll be looking at in the future, show maybe, patients who are younger will do much better with these devices.
And right. Like all these things, like time is always what defines what we exactly are going to do and how the technology itself evolves. I mean, there's certainly a cosmetic aspect also to somebody who's younger, you don't want to have a big box sitting in your chest that, you go out to the beach or something like all of a sudden, like, oh, what do you got on your chest there? So there are certainly different ways to look at this. But as the technology improves, it's kind of like TAVRs versus a surgical ABR also too. It's kind of, time will tell us to what's the best way for us to do this. And technology is going to constantly keep improving also too. And so it's just like the new generation of iPhones or, Android and things like that. It's going to keep evolving and getting better and better.
Absolutely. Well, it will be exciting to see where this goes, and we'll have to do another update in a few years so that we can figure it out and you guys can tell us. So thank you for this. Let's go to the portion of our show where we make random recommendations. Let's see if you all have something you'd recommend the audience check out for fun. Jordan, let's start with you.
Yeah, so I had a book. I'd read it as a medical student, actually. It's called When Breath Becomes Air by Paul Kalanathi. For those who haven't read it or heard of it, he was a neurosurgical resident when he found out he had like terminal stage 4 cancer. And it's kind of, he was also someone who had done a lot of study in English. So he's an extremely brilliant writer. And as a result, he kind of like reflects on his mortality and how it was to be a patient rather than, you know, just primarily being a physician and how that kind of changed his perspective. And I think, unfortunately, like while he was writing it, he ended up passing away in 2015. But I just recently went on a trip and saw it and bought it again. And it's even more meaningful now after having been, you know, a resident and now a fellow and spent more time in the medical world to kind of just like read his thoughts and musings about it. So anyways, I would recommend to anyone who hasn't read it to check it out.
Yeah, fabulous book and fabulous writer. I agree. Great. Jonathan, how about you?
That's a lot deeper than what my recommendation is. But recently, in terms of the podcast rotation, I've been really liking this podcast called Lateral by Tom Scott. He, you know, with a few other people, podcasters, will go through, you know, kind of silly questions or scenarios, asking in a kind of unique way that causes you to kind of work through and ask, and try to figure out the scenario that's being asked about.
Nice. That sounds great. Never heard of it, but I'll have to check it out. Manoj?
For me, recently, with my wife, got into watching a Netflix series called Running Point.
So good.
Yeah. Kind of like a lot of, almost like Ted Lasso. It's about a woman who inherits a basketball team, the equivalent of the Los Angeles Lakers. And, you know, the dealing with family, dealing with, you know, star players, leadership, you know, when you have to step in, when you don't have to step in. And it's a good, easy watch at night to, you know, before heading to bed, puts a smile on your face and makes you feel good.
Very cool. Is it as good as Ted Lasso?
I'd say it's pretty, it's almost there.
It's almost there.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's another season coming out. I'm curious to see how the next season plays out. But yeah,
all right, that's great.
Yeah.
We loved Ted Lasso. So yeah, well, I'll tell my wife we have to check that out. And I'm going to recommend a TV show, The White Lotus Season 3, which we just finished. You know, we almost didn't watch it because we enjoyed the first two seasons, but we had heard that the third season wasn't as good. And so we were like, well, is it worth it? And I'm glad we did. I don't know why it's kind of gotten that rumor or reputation as being not as good. We thought it was very good, entertaining, interesting, well done, well acted. And so I'm going to recommend it, White Lotus Season 3. And if you haven't seen Season 1 and 2, those are great too. All right, everybody. This was great. I learned a ton, and I'm sure everyone else will too. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for having us.
All right. Hopefully you got as much out of that as I did. That was really fantastic. Let us know what you thought. Go to the website, acrac.com, where you can leave a comment. Others can learn from what you have to say. If you are a fan of the show, you can follow us. We're on Twitter. We are on Facebook. We are on Reddit. And we are on Instagram. I'm at Jay Wolpaw on Twitter, and we're at ACRAC Podcast, and you can find us on all those other platforms as well. If you are a fan of the show, please consider going to Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts and leaving a comment and a rating. It really helps others find the show. If you'd like to support the making of the show, please consider going to patreon.com/ACRAC. That's patreon.com/ACRAC, where you can become a patron of the show. Even if it's just a dollar or two that you pledge, it makes a big difference, and we really appreciate it. You can also make donations anytime by going to paypal.me/ACRAC or looking up Jay Wolpaw on Venmo. Thank you so much to those who have already made donations and become patrons. We really appreciate it. Thanks, as always, to our fantastic ACRAC crew. Sonia Amanat is our tech lead. Taylor Duggan is our social media manager. And William Mao is our production assistant. Thanks so much for all you do. Our original ACRAC music is by Dr. Dennis Kuo. You can check out his website at studymusicproject.com. All right. That is it for today. For the ACRAC podcast, I'm Jed Wolpaw. Thanks for listening. Remember, what you're doing out there every day is really important and valued.
Thank you.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $300 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $300 into something bigger when you bet on money lines, spread, totals, player props.
$300 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply, in-app only.